Today, if you say the words global health, I think most people think of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, but they're fairly newcomers on the scene. Let's talk a little bit about how the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation came to be and why did this happen in Seattle?
First, when I look at the medical aspect, there's clearly a different perspective on the West Coast than on the East Coast. The University of Washington Medical Center is relatively new. People were looking outward rather than inward or back to Europe, and so it was natural to be thinking of something beyond the Seattle or the Washington State area. But I think also the Seattle area has a global perspective when you think of groups like Boeing or Microsoft or Starbucks. People were thinking globally, not a local market. And so there was a feeling of globalness here. And when the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation started, it started in very fertile ground.
There's clearly a lot of excitement among young people and college students wanting to play a role in improving health and fighting poverty. Is there a place for these young people? Are there jobs?
In the economic depression that we're going through now, there was a bid to raise money for vaccines, and Bill Gates and others were successful in raising $4.3 billion, which will now make it possible for poor children in poor countries to actually have rotavirus and human papillomavirus vaccines. Just to be able to deliver those vaccines will require a huge infrastructure. It's hard for me to imagine that there will not be positions and jobs for young people when I look just at the vaccine area.
So, Bill, if you make people healthier, aren't they just going to live longer lives of poverty?
Two things, poverty and health, actually influence each other. But poverty is the single most important social determinant of health. When I went to Nigeria, we lived in a village, and I found myself asking, how could my son be living there so relatively free of disease compared to the other children in the village? And it came down to only two things. Number one, we had special knowledge, which allowed us to use anti-malarials, which allowed us to put screens on the window, boil the water, and so forth. But the other thing was poverty. If I had to live on a dollar a day, I would have to put it into food and shelter. I could not afford firewood for boiling water and other things. So poverty is the single most important factor in health. On the other hand, improving health can reduce poverty, because the farmer who is not suffering from malaria or guinea worm or 100 other diseases is more productive, is able to do more at planting and harvesting and so forth. So you make people more productive and you increase the chance that they can improve their income if they are healthy. So the two are so intertwined, you have to work on both.
I know you like history. You like to cite historians like Arnold Toynbee, saying where we've been and where we're headed. We've made tremendous progress in global health over the past decade. So where are we headed in the next decade?
Toynbee once said that the 20th century would not be remembered for such things as war and conflict, but rather for the fact that we achieved equity in global health. He was absolutely wrong. But we now have a chance in the 21st century to actually make that happen, because the tools have improved, the ability to diagnose, the ability to treat, the ability to prevent, the resources are increasing. It's important for political reasons to do these things. We now see corporations fully engaged, and the amount of money that's being put in by drug companies into global health is unbelievable. We see the education system focusing on global health. I think we have a chance of making Toynbee's prediction actually come true sometime within the next few decades.
Well, thanks, Bill. Thanks for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me.